This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News Talk Radio WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week on the eve of the 2010 NFL Draft. For the first time ever, we say that. Normally, this program airs on Wednesday and the draft comes around on Saturday, but for the first time ever, first round coverage tomorrow night starting at 7 o'clock right here on News Talk Radio WOKV.
I just saw that Mel Kiper has Jimmy Clausen rated ahead of Sam Bradford.
Yeah, and I got to say, we're going to start our mock drafts. So forget the phone lines tonight, folks. We never go to them.
I'm getting killed for having Jimmy Clausen ahead of Sam Bradford. Now that, you know, Mel the Hare.
Kiper himself has gone with it?
Yeah.
He's had him there for a while.
Oh, has he?
Yeah.
You know who's number one on his board, though?
Who?
Dominican Sue.
Oh, he has to be.
So here's the question. Why in the world would the St. Louis Rams take Sam Bradford number one
why.
Overall? And do you really believe that's what's going to happen?
Because the St. Louis Rams are the St. Louis Rams. That's the problem here. You see, you're talking about a team that has had a second pick of the draft last year and now the first pick this year. If they had picked, for instance, last year, Mark Sanchez, number two overall, and Ndamukong Suh this year, number one overall.
Oh, they'd be set.
They'd be set. Instead, they drafted number two, Jason Smith. Help me. Is that his name?
Yeah, offensive tackle from Baylor.
Yeah, who some people didn't think he was a first-round pick
at all. He can't even get on the field. He's a stiff. All right? And they drafted him number two overall, and now they're going to draft Sam Bradford. They could end up with instead of stud.
The thing about Bradford that confuses me is he, as you've pointed out many times, never won a big bowl game.
He couldn't even beat Boise State or West Virginia.
But he had two shoulders. What do you call that? Sublexed?
Yeah, sublexed, which basically means it pops out.
Right.
Non-throwing
well,
shoulder.
Good thing.
But let me ask you this. If the Rams continue to draft 1 and 2 uh-huh. year after year after year, could they ever get in salary cap trouble?
Well, there's no cap anymore.
I mean, there's not now. But I mean,
well, they wouldn't have any revenue because they can't sell enough tickets.
If there was a cap. I mean, would a team get into salary cap trouble consistently drafting 1 and 2?
Well, but if they bust early enough, you just get rid of them. For instance, Adam Carriker appears to be a bust.
Trade him.
And,
well, he was an injury guy too.
And the guy and Howie Long's kid appears to be a bust. So I mean, they'll get out from under these in 3 years.
A Virginia kid a bust? You don't know the rule. We don't speak bad of Virginia kids on these airwaves.
Hey, the Jaguars drafted a kid from Virginia, and he's not a bust.
Yeah, Eugene Monroe. Hey, before we start our mock draft, how will the Ben Roethlisberger story impact the draft?
It's going to affect
tomorrow?
The entire draft.
There's no question.
In case folks are just joining us and have not heard, Ben Roethlisberger suspended today by NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell
for six years.
It'll feel like 6 years to Steelers fans. For six games. Now, that can go down to four. It could go up to eight, depending on how he interacts with some, what do they call it, clinical professionals?
Yeah, it'll go up to eight.
Yeah. So there is a lot of NFL media that is chasing the story of Ben Roethlisberger being traded.
Yeah.
So how
the story is there's two really interested teams that have the ammunition to do it. One arm is Oakland that drafts at number 8, and the other one is San Francisco that has first round picks at 13 and 17.
But no, let me ask you this: first of all, your opinion is that right? Six games, does the punishment fit the crime?
Jeff, here's the...
Or really, there's no crime.
Here's the approach I'm going to...
There hasn't been.
He hasn't even been charged.
Yeah.
Here's the approach I'm going to take to that. I'm going to take the approach that the National Football League, the commissioner, and the Pittsburgh Steelers know more about this than I do. So apparently, to do something this extreme, which goes way beyond what we expected...
I mean, people expected two or three games.
They must know that there are issues. You know, I'm hearing that we're going to go through a Tiger Woods thing here. You know, every week, every day, there's going to be someone else come out of the closet and say, I was raped by Ben Roethlisberger. No, I was raped by... Every day, it's going to be someone else. Of course, proving it and claiming it are two different things. But it's not the thing of which this league was built. And they are sending a very, very strong message. And by the way, the Steelers supported the commissioner on this today, steadfastly supported the commissioner. So they are also sending the message to their players that there is zero tolerance for off-the-field crap.
And they're one of the best teams in the league at that. Let me ask you this.
Yeah, ask Antonio Holmes.
Yeah.
He's a great player.
Are they actively shopping Ben?
Yeah.
They are?
Yeah. It's almost certain now. The word is that they had a little deal with him. After the motorcycle thing, the deal was no more reckless stuff. And then came the Tahoe thing, and at that time the agreement was one more and you're out. Well, this is one more.
How soon, and you were very involved with the Players Association, how soon does the Players Association, though, stand into this fray and say, hey, look, wait, the DA in I forget what county it was.
Milledgeville.
But Milledgeville is the town up in Georgia. They didn't charge him. They didn't have enough evidence to charge him with anything.
Do you want to hear the facts on this?
Sure.
All right. The Jonathan Silver of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette wrote a fantastic investigative investigative reporting story on Sunday, and it appeared Sunday, just loaded, long story, loaded with facts from reports. Number one, the alleged victim, whose name we don't know.
Not at this point.
All right. Was allegedly asked by the reporting officer, who has since had to resign. That's how screwed up this whole thing is. Was asked, were you raped? And her answer was, I'm not sure, according to the officer. I'm not sure. Now, shouldn't you be sure before you convict a guy of rape?
Hence the DA saying, let's not charge him.
Well, I mean, once Garland, Roethlisberger's attorney, found out that was on the report, which the DA should have never given to the defendant's attorney, once he found out, the case was over. He knew, you know, you're not getting anything from me because this one's done. The other thing is this. This is about DNA. Roethlisberger had agreed to volunteer to provide a DNA sample. At some point during the investigation, they called him and said, that's okay, we won't need it. And, of course, the reason they didn't need it because they didn't have one to match it to. Jonathan Silver explained in his story that it takes a nanogram of DNA evidence to convict a guy. A nanogram is 1/1,000,000th of a gram. For example, a raisin is a gram. If you cut a raisin into 1 billion pieces, they didn't even have one of those pieces in the way of DNA evidence against Roethlisberger, meaning that the girl was almost untouched by anybody in the bar. There was just no way they were going to get this guy. Yet he's out for 6 games, which means that the NFL knows more than we do.
All right. So just real quick, does the union get associated with this? Do they step in and file a complaint on his behalf?
Typically, the union gets involved at the player's direction.
Okay. So if he doesn't call and ask, they're not going in.
Now, he's agreed to it. He's told the Steelers and he's told the league that he would agree going into the adjudication of this. He told the league and the Steelers that he would agree to whatever punishment they handed down.
All right, so stay tuned. A trade could change the way the first round rolls out. We're going to take a break before we start. One more note, Quinton Groves was traded today to the Oakland Raiders for a conditional pick. It pends a physical. Obviously, that's the way most of those things go. They will have no announcement from here or Oakland about the terms until that physical is passed at some point in the next day.
I'm stunned by that news. I can't imagine that a team has traded for Quinton. I mean, I don't think...
That it's the Raiders doesn't change?
I just don't think he was going to make... I didn't think he was going to make this team. I don't understand why you would trade.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and provide you our version of a mock draft here on the night before the 2010 NFL draft begins. Jaguars this week on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Well, join the Jaguars for the 16th annual Bud Light Draft Party presented by PRI Productions. It's draft day, which is tomorrow, 6 o'clock at the Seawalk Pavilion in Jacksonville Beach. Admission's free. You'll meet Jaguars players, The Roar, Jackson DeVille. Also a chance to win some great prizes. So here we go with Jaguars this week's JTW's 2010 mock draft. Number one, St. Louis. Quarterback Sam Bradford from Oklahoma. Even though I don't want to make the pick, that's what we selected. Actually, We decided you're making the first pick, you're making the second pick,
okay.
I'm making the third pick. So
I just went with Bradford because everyone said that I'm crazy that I have him ranked as low as I do on my value board, and because now that's really not the reason. It's because all reports are that St. Louis thinks he's the guy,
and they won't pass on a quarterback for the third straight year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like him. Name me the greatest quarterback in Big 8, Big 12 history.
Well, Troy Aikman was there for a brief stay.
Yeah. 1 year. He didn't never played.
Yeah. But, I mean, other than that, you really don't have anybody.
Steve Grogan. No, you're right. There have not been a lot. You're absolutely
right. But it's different now. Obviously, you know, for years that conference was all about
the
wishbone and everything else. Mm. All right, so number two, Detroit. Jim Schwartz wants the next coming of Albert Haynesworth and Ndamukong Suh.
This guy's better than Haynesworth because he's a good human being. This is a responsible citizen. This is a guy that you can build a locker room around, not just a football team around. You can build a locker room around this guy.
Number three, Tampa Bay. They take the next best guy, and he's not that far behind Ndamukong Suh. He's a Big 12 guy. By the way, this would be three in a row for that conference to start things out. Gerald McCoy, the defensive tackle from Oklahoma, who is said to be more Warren Sapp-like in his quickness to the quarterback.
You know, my little draft board here, you know, which I've worked extensively at compiling, I have McCoy right at the top.
Burn the phones up. Do diligent
research. I think McCoy
has
more upside and more downside than Sue. He's not the steady Eddie that Sue is.
All right. That brings us to number four in Washington. Vic, you're making that pick.
Yeah, this is easy stuff. The best big guy on offense, Russell Okung. Some are saying this could be Trent Williams, the tackle from Oklahoma, but I think Okung from Oklahoma State is generally regarded as the better player.
And they have to replace Chris Samuels. They've got to have somebody out there.
What
who can
good
protect
is it to have traded for Donovan McNabb, an older quarterback, if you can't protect him?
So Russell Okung off the board at four. That brings up Kansas City at number five.
And offensive line once again, Brian Bulaga, Iowa. It seems like that university just keeps putting them out.
You know, and Kirk Ferentz was an offensive line coach with the Browns and with the Ravens. And those guys are well-schooled. Did you say Joel Hilgenberg?
Yeah, I actually talked
former
with Joel
Bear.
When I was in Iowa on a charity event. And he does volunteer/coach with the Iowa coaching staff. And so he's been taught by a good one.
All right. Is there any chance Bulaga could make it down to the Jaguars?
Sure. If Trent Williams jumps in there, if C.J. Spiller goes somehow along, absolutely.
Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah, but you just don't know how it rolls, right?
Keep your eye on him, folks. He's a guy that, let me say this. Gene Smith described Brian Bulaga to me as representing, quote-unquote, great value, which is a way of saying that if he was there when it's the Jaguars' turn to pick, that might be too much value to pass.
Well, a year ago when we were doing this draft, we had Eugene Monroe going number two overall.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no way to know he would get all the way to eight where the Jaguars were last year. So if Eugene Monroe can slide.
Were we right? Should the Rams have taken Eugene Monroe over Jason
Smith?
Far
better ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So if Eugene Monroe can slide that far, then Brian Bulaga could as well. So our top five, a lot like top fives you'll see all over the internet. St. Louis was Sam Bradford. Detroit with Ndamukong Suh, who, if you watch the Big 12 title game, he destroyed the inside of that Texas offensive line. That's Texas offensive line now, right? Not Abilene Christian. Number three, Tampa Bay, Gerald McCoy, the defensive tackle from Oklahoma. Number four, Russell Okung, the offensive tackle from Oklahoma State. And number five, the big boy from Iowa, Brian Bulaga, which brings us to number six, Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks must get some things going this year. They have got to replace Walter Jones, who had the microfracture surgery. So,
and you remember how bad that offensive line was?
Well, Jaguars couldn't get a sack.
I know, but
them.
I mean, they were terrible last year.
Well, and so Trent Williams makes sense. And obviously now you've had a run of three offensive tackles in a row. Bang, bang, bang. Williams from Oklahoma. A lot of people think he has passed Okung from Oklahoma State, but it makes sense for them with this run of tackles going for Seattle to take their offensive tackle right here at number six. Just a programming note here. We're going to go three more picks. We're going to go with Cleveland, Oakland, Buffalo. Then we'll talk about a few of them, break for news, and then keep you hanging through the news for the Jaguars pick. But let's go back to you, Vic, for the Cleve Brownies.
Well, I'm supposed to pick Eric Berry here, so I will. I mean, that's what all the information says. But I don't know. This That doesn't seem like a very sexy pick for the Browns. And the Browns love to make splashes. You know, they like to do goofy things. Kellen Winslow, and then, you know, the big Brady Quinn trade, you know,
back into the
first round. And it just, you know, taking a safety at number 7, is that really the way to kick off the new regime? So I'll go with it, but
it's Mike
Holmgren.
That's
another name to watch. That's another name to watch. I think this guy could fall to the Jaguars.
But it is Mike Holmgren, and he's never been the flashy guy, has he?
A safety, though? I mean,
what if he's Ed Reed?
He's got quarterback problems, and Jimmy Clausen is there. And I want you to remember something. I want to remind you of something that Mike Holmgren said about Jimmy Clausen, which is, I think, a very pregnant comment by Holmgren. He said, "I wish I liked him more." Yeah, you don't say that if you don't like the
game. Yeah, that's not very good.
I don't like that. That's almost like you're trying to steer people the wrong way.
All right, and next is Oakland at number 8. And let's just remind you that the Raiders are completely unpredictable. A year ago, they could have had for themselves Eugene Monroe. They could have had the best offensive tackle in the draft, and instead they went for Darius Heyward-Bey, the wide receiver from Maryland, based purely on his 40
time. Well, let me just add this. We've got Oakland taking Jimmy Clausen, which is just amazing, and that only a few years after them taking the 290-pounder,
Jamarcus Russell,
that they have opted to take a quarterback again. But you had mentioned the Eugene Monroe best tackle in the draft last year. I think that's debatable. Baltimore may have, in fact, gotten the best tackle in the draft.
Michael Oher.
He struggled. Oh. He didn't struggle as much. He struggled more than Eugene Monroe.
That's not what I hear.
He had a 5-sack night against the Steelers. Lamar Woodley lit him up. I don't know about that, Jeff. I think Eugene Monroe got a bad rap on last year, and it was all because of that first game.
I'm not trying to give him a bad rap, but he's got progress to make. Just leave it at that.
All right, so the Raiders go ahead and grab Jimmy Clausen, the quarterback from Notre Dame, in our mock draft.
That's the rumor is that the Raiders could trade for Roethlisberger.
Well, and so this is one of those flashpoints, depending on how it plays out over the next 24 hours with Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers, and the Raiders.
And could Buffalo, who sits one spot behind Oakland, want to move up?
I hear that Clausen is not a Chan Gailey quarterback. That's what I'm hearing, is that he's not big on him.
All right, so we've got Buffalo on the clock next. And at number 9, they need help on the defensive line. And we'll go with Dan Williams, the big, rugged interior tackle. He could be a nose tackle. He can play as a defensive tackle from Tennessee, goes to the Buffalo Bills. And so here's our first 9 before we break for news here at the bottom of the hour. St. Louis at number 1, Sam Bradford, the quarterback from Oklahoma. Number 2, Detroit, and Ndamukong Suh, the defensive tackle from Nebraska. Number 3, Gerald McCoy, the defensive tackle from Oklahoma to Tampa Bay. Number 4 is Russell Okung, the big offensive tackle from Oklahoma State, who in our mock draft is a Washington Redskin. Rounding out the top 5, Kansas City grabs Brian Bulaga, the offensive tackle from Iowa, who, by the way, Gene Smith told me not 3 hours ago, could play center, could play any spot, very versatile, which is why, as Vic said, he called him valuable in their interview. Number 6, Trent Williams, the offensive tackle, goes to Seattle. He's from Oklahoma. He would be a Seahawk if our draft played out as we have this one rolling along, replacing Walter Jones, the longtime Florida State Seminole. At 7, Cleveland, Eric Berry, maybe the most dynamic playmaker in the defensive backfield that is in this draft. Safety from Tennessee, followed by Jimmy Clausen, the quarterback from Notre Dame to Oakland, though that's the first flashpoint when it comes to the Ben Roethlisberger situation. Do the Raiders grab Ben Roethlisberger and bounce out of that spot? And at number 9, that brings up Dan Williams, the big defensive tackle from Tennessee, who helps solidify the Buffalo Bills. When we return after the news break here at the bottom of the hour, we'll tell you how we see the Jaguars drafting in our mock draft. And, of course, tomorrow night, we will have for you live coverage of the first round beginning at 7 o'clock right here on News Talk Radio WOKV, where news is next. Get the Jaguars draft picks as they happen on your phone. Just text radio to 58154. That's radio 58154. Sign up by 2 o'clock on Saturday and have a chance to win an authentic Jaguars helmet signed by the 2010 first-round pick. Message and data rates may apply. Text STOP to QUIT. And, of course, you can follow the first round tomorrow night right here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Our coverage begins at 7 o'clock. And we will, of course, have the coach first, general manager Gene Smith first, the player first. We will have in-depth coverage for you right here, starting again at 7 o'clock Eastern time. So, here we are at number 10 with the Jaguars selection. Bradford, Sue, McCoy, Okung, Balaga, Williams, Barry, Clawson, Dan Williams. And, Vic, you make the pick for the Jaguars as you have since 1998.
It's got to be you-know-who, right? It's got to be.
C.J. Spiller?
No. Come on, Jeff. Come on. You got to get with the program. It's got to be Tim Tebow.
All right, Steve.
I'm going with Tebow.
Vic Bo goes with Tebow, but that's not who we went with.
I'll take him in the second round. If GMG can get a pick in a trade back and get a pick in the second round, I'll take Tim Tebow.
You were gone for like 7 minutes, and you came back with this stuff?
I wrote this all down.
Yeah,
all
thanks. Go for it. Okay.
I'll go with Tim Tebow in the second round so that the people can have their guy. I mean, they want to have their guy.
Pick we're in the first round.
And then I'm going to
make your pick.
Then I'm going with C.J. Spiller because, you know, Lake Butler is only 55 miles away, and you can't draft somebody from outside of Florida.
Now, he fits there, right?
Right.
Great player.
Right, great player. He really is. He really is. Kick returner, rusher, pass catcher. He's gonna extend Maurice Jones-Drew's career. He would extend Maurice Jones-Drew's career. He's going to score touchdowns. He's going to make David Garrard a better quarterback. He's going to make Evan Britton and Eugene Monroe better blockers. He's going to make Mike Sims-Walker and Mike Thomas better pass catchers. Just as Maurice Jones-Drew
did for Fred.
Did it for Fred. Bingo.
But can you,
Fred's best year of his career was with Maurice Jones-Drew.
Can you imagine, though, that how good of a backfield that would be with Maurice and Spiller and then a developing Rashad Jennings?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be an outstanding backfield.
And if you could get...
And Greg Jones. I can't leave him out of that conversation.
If you could get Tim Tebow in the second round, just think you could all the things you could do with, you know, Slash and H-back and...
All right, let's talk real quick about the candidates for the 10 spot. I mean... How do you see it rolling out? C.J. Spiller is obviously one of them.
And Dan Williams is another.
Okay, the defensive tackle that we had going to Buffalo at number 9. Who else would be on their short list
Joe Hayden.
When they go on the clock? The corner from Florida.
Williams, Joe Hayden, C.J. Spiller, Brian Bulaga would certainly be a consideration if he was
were
down
to get
there.
Through there.
Des Bryant, no.
How about Derek Morgan? How about the guy out of South Florida?
Jason Pierre-Paul.
Oh, Pierre-Paul. Oh, Jeffrey, the temptation is it's just, I'm going to tell you, they love him, but
they're scared of him.
Yeah, it's like that girlfriend who's nuts, you know? You got to watch yourself. I mean, this guy, he just, you look at him and you see Lawrence Taylor and Javon Kearse, and then you look at the stats and you see R.J. Soward.
Oof.
I mean, he hasn't done it. Six and a half sacks?
I think a more relevant comparison would be Vernon Golston.
Bingo.
You know, because
I was trying to give a little Jaguars
but Golston, Golston played in the Big Ten, though. You know,
yeah, I mean, but he does. R.J. Soward was a huge character.
Wait a minute. This guy's played against top tackles in the Big East. This
one of them's on the board.
That's right. Anthony Davis from Rutgers. It's not as though... That league is not to be compared in quality to the SEC or the Big 12, but this is the league that's turned out.
No, it's good.
Darius Butler and Darrell Revis and some good-looking tackles and pass rushers. And they got a couple defensive ends next year. They're going to be at the very top of the board. Jason Pierre-Paul is the temptation of all temptations, but... I have seen reports on him that just slaughter him. I mean, just savage him. You know, he's a guy who beats the guy across from him but can't finish on the quarterback. He has no technique.
Is he clean character-wise?
Good guy.
Okay.
Good guy. Comes from Haiti?
Yes.
Yes.
And has learned the language and has overcome some very, very tough beginnings. And played junior college football and only had one year, I guess, in the South Florida system, but his talent. Here's the problem. If you draft him, it may not be until 2012 that he's the player you draft him to be.
He's got Reggie Hayward. You went and signed a pretty big free agent from the Green Bay Packers.
Does it work that way nowadays, though?
No, look at the pressure on Derek Harvey.
It did for Kiwanuka of the New York Giants when he had two defensive ends and Justin Tuck. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it worked for them. If you feel that good about him, you know, you're okay to where he doesn't have to play now.
They like him. No, they like him a lot.
Derek Harvey is starting to develop a little bit, and it puts more pressure, I think, on Derek having all of a sudden them defensive end positions getting crowded.
I think they would have a lot of trouble pulling the trigger on him. But I'm absolutely certain that they like him a lot.
All right. Now, what about the other alternative, and that is a trade-down scenario? Jimmy Clausen is off the board. Is C.J. Spiller or Jason Pierre-Paul or Kyle Wilson, is anybody left there, and there's a lot of players left, worth someone coming to 10-4? Or if Clausen's off the board, does that mean they're stuck?
Not in a draft this deep. That's the problem. See, that's the problem. If you had, for instance, a 10-player draft, meaning that you had the last pick of a 10,
which it never is, but it has that impression.
Yes, exactly. You're right. But this one does not have that impression. This one has the impression of being an almost 4-5-round draft. This one is deep, and especially on the defensive side of the ball. If Clausen is there, maybe, but I don't even know if Clausen could do it now with Roethlisberger in the picture.
All right, folks, we have reached the Jaguars pick, and it's C.J. Spiller from Lake Butler, 57 miles away. We'll take a break. Right now, when we come back, we'll go through the rest of the first round. Obviously, it doesn't have quite the drama for our show here this evening as we have already had with that 10th pick. But we'll go through it and tell you about some of the other players and continue on with our coverage of 2010 NFL Draft here on WOKV. Depend on it. All right, we made a decision in the break. Since it's a mock draft and we're just doing what everyone else is doing, which is trying to assign a spot for a player, we try to take a little different approach to it. We don't try to match the team up with our mock draft. We try to match the player in the slot, where they go. But it's kind of boring. So we gave the Jaguars C.J. Spiller. Just looking at the draft, where we have Miami taking Jason Pierre-Paul a couple of picks later at number 12. We have San Francisco taking Joe Hayden, the cornerback from Florida, at number 13. Marquise Pouncey, the center, who's probably the best overall Gator in this year's draft. I think most people would agree.
No, Joe Hayden.
Really?
Yeah,
Joe Hayden. This kid's climbing, though.
I don't know. I like Pouncey now.
Do you?
Yeah, I like him.
Big, physical, tough guy.
To me, a corner, if he doesn't have elite speed, man, I know he's a playmaker, mm-hmm. and I've said before, hey, Ty Law never had elite speed, mm-hmm. and he's a Hall of Fame player.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. In today's day and age, in the game today, if you're not a lights-out burner, and you don't have to be 4-2, but, I mean, give me 4-3, low 4-4s if you're a corner.
Well, and Tennessee needs a center to replace Kevin Mawai, so we had Pouncey going there. Houston, we had taking Sergio Kindle, the defensive end from Texas, just to stay in the division for a moment, running down the board.
I'm kind of surprised that you guys, you know, obviously put this board together. Des Bryant is going to go that high to Denver. I know they traded their one of the best receivers in the game in Brandon Marshall.
Real weapon.
But I think Des Bryant is going to fall because the more of the stuff that comes out on his background and his, you know, his mom and things of that nature, and the guy's got he's a bad guy.
He's got bad stuff.
And with what the commissioner is doing with Ben Roethlisberger, if that doesn't send another message to teams, don't take bad guys that make a lot of money.
You're right.
We were just trying to fit guys with where they fit as a player, and obviously he is very much.
I mean, if Randy Moss fell all the way down to what pick?
21.
Then I can't imagine Des Bryant doing any better when he didn't even play last year.
Brian, I want you to pronounce the name at number 31 for the listeners.
Tyson Alualua.
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 Alualua. Hear that? Alualua.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce it.
A-L-U-A-L-U.
I want every Jaguars fan, I want everyone listening to this show to remember that name. Say it again.
Alualu.
He is a def.
Huh?
Joe.
Please. Joe, you
if
tried.
From Philadelphia, you can barely talk to begin with. Yeah, how you doing, huh? The defensive tackle from Cal. One more time.
Well, now
Alualu.
I mean, I tried to read the phonetic online. Alualu is how I saw it. But
remember that name.
Joe's got me thinking now.
And it's just, and it's not
Samoan Bloody's got.
It's not because I've assigned him to Indianapolis.
Why? Because you like to pronounce his name or try?
No. I think he's a preferred player here. I think he's on their radar. He is a guy I just snuck into the bottom of the first round.
Talk about him a little bit.
You know, to get him on the radio to talk about him in this mock draft thing, because I think it's a name that we want to remember.
Could he be a possibility at 10?
No.
Okay.
No, but GM Gene is working this thing now. He's got he's got a pretty nice little pick there for Quentin Groves.
If he passes the physical,
but we don't know what it is.
No. I really don't know. But he's got a pretty nice little pick for Quentin Groves, and it's a pick that you could do something with if you package with another pick.
So it was a pretty good pick, but in other words, if you got a package, yeah, it's not that
it's not
second
that good,
rounder they're missing.
But it's better than you might think. And
that won't become known until after he passes the
GM Gene wants in the second round in the biggest way. I mean, he's...
So who else is on the trading block? Who else could go?
Well, we've talked about the possibility of John Henderson because you only have X number of players who have the value to return a pick. Rasheen Mathis, David Garrard, Maurice Jones-Drew, John Henderson. So, I mean, you know, Daryl Smith. Well, you're not trading those guys.
Right.
You know, well, John is a guy, if you drafted a defensive tackle, oh, hey, look, we got a surplus here. That's not a knock on John. That's to compliment John on his value. When you are as big and as accomplished as John is, you retain value for a long time. Ask the guy in Cleveland, the nose tackle, Sean
Rogers.
You know, his career was dead and gone in Detroit, and next thing you know, he's one of the best defensive linemen in the game. You can resurrect a career when you're that big and strong.
All right, now, a name that's missing from our board, which will not surprise anyone who listens to this show or has for the last year, is Tim Tebow.
That's twice.
I wanted to take Tebow.
To talk about him.
You
had to get Vic started on that again.
Yeah, we've got seven more minutes of the show.
If GM Gene gets the second round pick, I say take him. Give the people what they want. And then if they don't fill this building, I am going to rip them a new one.
You've never done that before. The other possibility that you had that we talked about was Minnesota trading for Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I mean.
And they're sitting at number 30.
There's a couple teams up there, San Francisco and Minnesota, that if they trade for Roethlisberger, oh, baby. You know, San Francisco's got two first-round picks. They could get Roethlisberger and get the Steelers' first-round pick, meaning they would still have a first-round pick, and trade their two, 13 and 17, to the Steelers. Jeff, they would be done. They would have the receiver in Crabtree. They would have the back in Gore. They would have that fabulous defense led by Patrick Willis.
Yeah, and the one thing that I said to you earlier is that they don't have a very good offensive line in San Francisco, but Ben has never had a very good offensive line in Pittsburgh. He thrives without a good offensive line. He's the best quarterback in the league without a good offensive line.
He did in the beginning when Faneca was in his prime and Marvell Smith was okay, but then he lost them very quickly. And his offensive lines in recent years through this last Super Bowl victory was just garbage.
I like him going to Minnesota because then he can go he can pack up his RV and drive to Minnesota and then get on the boat.
You know, and also, let me tell you something. Jeff, they've got a great great gold club there.
Something exciting and new.
No, really. Now they've got a great gold club, and I'm sure Ben would like that.
Oh man!
Years ago,
no one is sacrosanct on this program.
I was in there years ago. It was like about 1 a.m. I looked around. I'm counting Steelers players. Next day, I get on a bus, and I said to Cowher, I said, at 1 o'clock in the morning. Today at 1 o'clock in the morning, I had a better chance of calling a team meeting than you did. And he said, "Where were you?" I said, "Gold Club."
Did he say, "Oh, I was there too. You just didn't see me." So as you look, you know, at the Jaguars selection.
What?
I'm sorry.
You're a rat.
Do you want to say something into the microphone?
You ratted out the Pittsburgh players, Vic.
I didn't rat them out. I just started counting.
Oh. You ratted the team out.
Yeah, I just stick at the Cowher a little bit.
Just for fun.
What's wrong with Bill Cowher? What do you have against him?
I was I left, the Carlton Hassel rig was still there.
You remember the rig?
I do.
Oh, he never went to sleep.
He liked it, huh?
He was.
I mean, there. Listen, I'll tell you a quick story.
Okay.
It was the night before a big game, a playoff game. And I can tell, I can hear the voice in the room next to me. It belongs to Rod Woodson. I mean, clearly it's his voice. All night long. They've got something going on in there. I mean, all night long, and they are arguing, and they're just, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sleeping in five-minute shifts, you know. I got up to brush my teeth, put on my clothes, go down to the bus, and I thought to myself, oh, boy. I said, is he going to stink today? And he turned in one of the greatest playoff performances in playoff history.
Do you know what they say? The most important sleep is not the night before the game, but two nights before the game.
Is that right?
Yeah. Why? I don't know. I mean, that's just what a lot of the, I guess, physicians or whatever they talk about. And I don't know about you guys, but I mean, you know, if you've got something big happening the next day,
how are you gonna
sometimes
sleep?
You don't sleep.
Yeah, your brain doesn't turn off.
Yeah, you know, so I always seem to do better. In fact, I was more lively when I got really good sleep Friday night, and then Saturday night, you know, you wake up, and if you don't get all that much sleep, you're okay, you're ready to go. But if a night that you got a lot of sleep the night before the game, I woke up kind of sluggish.
You're going to get your head turned around. How are you going to sleep?
Yeah, you know, kind of happened every week.
All right, absolutely. Just for fun, 2 minutes left. Pick 10 all the way to pick 32, right? So none of the first nine players on the board. So no Bradford, Sue McCoy, Okung, Bulaga, Trent Williams, Eric Berry, Jimmy Clausen, Dan Williams. But if there was one player that you could handpick for this team, who would you like? That makes sense.
Taking the top.
Take the top nine. You can't have them. But you can have anyone from C.J. Spiller all the way through Kareem Jackson at number 32, who we had going to New Orleans. And one guy that you think, because of his position, because of his skill set, makes sense.
I'm going to stick with C.J. Spiller.
I
really believe that he is the best.
I think he would have the biggest impact.
Yeah. But I'll tell you a couple names now. Again, Tyson Alu or whatever his name is. Remember that name? Remember the name
Sean? Right?
Remember the name Sean Lee? We've talked about him. Penn State linebacker. Another guy they like a lot. You know, I'm not saying these are my guys, folks. I'm saying these are their guys. I'm giving you a tip here. Now, they're good. They would have to get into the second round. They would have to get a second round pick to have a shot at these guys.
What would it take to get into the second round with what, not counting what they got for Quentin Groves, with their picks that they have now? What would it take to get a second round pick?
Well, you'd have to.
Would you have to give up a future? Two and a four, or
could you take 10 and back up into the bottom third of the first round?
Okay, forget about Roethlisberger. Let's say Clausen is available to the Jaguars at 10, and let's say San Francisco liked him.
And they didn't get Ben in a trade.
Right. If you could drop down to San Francisco 17, if San Francisco came from 17 to 10, I think that would get you a two. All right. Switch picks. 10 and 17, and take their two.
And that'll do it for the show. We'll be back here tomorrow night, right at this moment, folks, 7 o'clock, to get things started with our live coverage of the 2010 NFL Draft. Have a great night.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station for Jaguars football, AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.